Chapter 35. I think it's an appalling act of desecration, said Richard to Reg, as they sat hiding behind a hedge. The night was full of summer smells from the cottage garden, and the occasional whiff of sea air which came in on the light breezes that were entertaining themselves on the coast of the Bristol Channel. There was a bright moon playing over the sea off in the distance, and by its light it was also possible to see some distance over Exmoor, stretching away to the south of them. Reg sighed. "Yes, maybe," he said, "but I'm afraid he's right, you know. It must be done. It was the only sure way. All the instructions were clearly contained in the piece, once you knew what you were looking for. It has to be suppressed. The ghost will always be around. In fact, two of him now, that is, assuming this works. Poor devil. Still, I suppose he brought it on himself." Richard fretfully pulled up some blades of grass and twisted them between his fingers. He held them up to the moonlight, turned them to different angles, and watched the way light played on them. "Such music," he said. "I'm not religious, but if I were, I would say it was like a glimpse into the mind of God. Perhaps it was, and I ought to be religious. I have to keep reminding myself that they didn't create the music, they only created the instrument which could read the score, and the score was life itself. And it's all up there." He glanced into the sky. Unconsciously, he started to quote, "Could I revive within me her symphony and song? To such a deep delight 'twould win me that with music loud and long I would build that dome in air, that sunny dome, those caves of ice." "Hmm," said Reg to himself. "I wonder if he arrived early enough." "What did you say?" said Richard. "Oh, nothing, just a thought." "Good God, he can talk, can't he?" Richard exclaimed suddenly. "He's been in there over an hour now. I wonder what's going on." He got up and looked over the hedge at the small farm cottage basking in the moonlight behind them. About an hour earlier, Dirk had walked boldly up to the front door and rapped on it. When the door had opened, somewhat reluctantly, and a slightly dazed face had looked out, Dirk had doffed his absurd hat and said in a loud voice, "Mr. Samuel Coleridge? I was just passing by on my way from Porlock, you understand, and I was wondering if I might trouble you to vouchsafe me an interview. It's just for a little parish broadsheet I edit. Won't take much of your time, I promise. I know you must be busy, famous poet like you, but I do so admire your work, and—" The rest was lost, because by that time Dirk had effected his entry and closed the door behind him. "Would you excuse me a moment?" said Reg. "What? Oh, sure," said Richard. "I'm just going to go and have a look and see what's happening." While Reg wandered off behind a tree, Richard pushed open the little gate and was about to make his way up the path when he heard the sound of voices approaching the front door from within. He hurriedly darted back as the front door started to open. "Well, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Coleridge," said Dirk as he emerged fiddling with his hat and bowing. "You have been most kind and generous with your time, and I do appreciate it very much, as I'm sure will my readers. I'm sure it'll work up into a very nice little article, a copy of which, you may rest assured, I will send you, for you to peruse at your leisure. I will most certainly welcome your comments, if you have any points of style, you know, hints, tips, things of that nature. Well, thank you again so much for your time. I do hope I haven't kept you from anything important." The door slammed violently behind him. Dirk turned with another in a long succession of triumphant beams and hurried down the path to Richard. "Well, let's put a stop to that," he said, patting his hands together. "I think he'd made a start on writing it down, but he won't remember another word, that's for certain. Where's the egregious professor? Oh, there you are. Good heavens, I'd no idea I'd been that long. A most fascinating and entertaining fellow, our Mr. Coleridge, or at least I'm sure he would have been if I'd given him the chance, but I was rather too busy being fascinating myself. Oh, but I did do as you asked, Richard. I asked him at the end about the albatross, and he said, 'What albatross?' So I said, it wasn't important, the albatross did not signify. He said, 'What albatross didn't signify?' And I said, 'Never mind the albatross, it didn't matter.' And he said, 'It did matter. Someone comes to his house in the middle of the night raving about albatrosses, he wanted to know why. I said, blast the bloody albatross, and he said he had a good mind to. And he wasn't certain that that didn't give him an idea for a poem he was working on. Much better, he said, than being hit by an asteroid, which he thought was stretching credulity a bit. And so I came away. Now, having saved the entire human race from extinction, I could do with a pizza. What do you say to such a proposal?" Richard didn't offer an opinion. He was staring instead with some puzzlement at Reg. Something troubling you?" said Reg, taken aback. "That's a good trick," said Richard. "I could have sworn you didn't have a beard before you went behind the tree." "Oh," Reg fingered the luxuriant 3-inch growth. Yes. He said, oh, just carelessness, he said, carelessness. What have you been up to? Oh, just a few adjustments, a little surgery, you understand, nothing drastic. A few minutes later, as he ushered them into the extra door that a nearby cowshed had mysteriously acquired, he looked back up into the sky behind them, just in time to see a small light flare up and disappear. Sorry, Richard, he muttered, and followed them in.